Welcome to another AECT 2006 convention podcast. In this podcast, you'll hear session number 27FOA. The title of this presentation is Examining the Effectiveness of the Many Hats of an Instructional Designer Game. The presenters were William Sugar of East Carolina University, Anthony Betris of SUNY Potsdam, and Selena Byers of Bloomsburg University. Please enjoy the session.
All right, well, welcome to this next session of the symposium. We're continuing this three-hour session together. And we've got, forgive me going back and forth, two other places to be, but it's kind of fun this point. We have Bill Sugar from East Carolina University. And Tony, what is that, the program? Anthony, Tony,
Beatrice,
from SUNY Potsdam, and also Selena will be participating in this. And I'm going to have them introduce themselves. And I've got the evaluation forms and some handouts. If anybody needs them, we'll be walking around kind of handing them out. So just let me know. All right, I'll turn the time over.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Well, good afternoon. I'm Bill Sugar from East Carolina University. And Selena will be joining us virtually. Not in real time. I wasn't sure about wireless connections, but she did make a captivating presentation, which we will see here in the presentation. The name of our presentation is Examining Effectiveness of the Many Hats of Instructional Designer Game. And that's really the overall purpose of our presentation, and that is to evaluate the effectiveness of that particular game on three instructional design and technology courses. So at three different sites, at three different universities, that we looked at that particular game and looked at the overall effectiveness of that game. And our initial question is fairly long, don't you think? Wow, it's like five lines, but is what is the impact of the many hats of instructional designer game upon instructional design and technology students' knowledge of the roles of the instructional designer. And
what do they know about what we do?
Yeah, that's right. And as well as the roles of instructional designer. And I just want to kind of give you kind of like a background into it, or a background story. And we started really off with the premise that instructional designers have many roles, or what we call hats. And most incoming, and some advanced ID&T students are not aware of these many hats. And the question is that we confronted is that how can we teach these students about these many hats? And the idea is that I came across when new students come in to me and say, well, what exactly is instructional design? Well, the idea was that we have many roles as instructional designers. And it all actually started with the genesis of this particular game was at a 19 conference presentation when I looked at trying to answer that question. What exactly do we do as instructional designers? And really with the intent of then conveying to the students who are becoming instructional designers about those many roles. And I came up with what I call instructional designer archetypes. You know, I just wanted to kind of give you an inside story. This morning, Tony made me actually put a year in there because I was, and there were about four or five instances when I was preparing this presentation, it's like, when did I give that presentation? And yeah, I actually, one time it was during the morning and another time during the afternoon. I really couldn't remember. And if you ever get to that point, that means you either have attended a lot of ACT presentations or conferences, or you're getting a little bit old. But because I did have 1990X. I knew it was in the 90s. And Tony looked up his CD.
We got it down.
Yeah, okay.
St. Louis, for anybody who's at St. Louis.
We think it's St. Louis. Or at least I think it was St. Louis. But here are the five designer archetypes. Designer as problem solver. Designer as artist. Designer as user, Designer's Counselor. Originally, we had Designer's Joker, but then when we further development of the game, which we developed the game based upon these archetypes, it was became Designer's Performer. So way back in 1999, I gave this presentation, and Tony was in the audience somewhere around there. And after the presentation, he said, "Hey, Bill, I think we could possibly develop a game based upon these archetypes. And not only a game, but an instructional game." And again, with the question of looking at those archetypes and saying, how can we best or effectively teach students about these designer archetypes? So
anyway, this kind of happened quickly. Great presentation. He had his brother-in-law do some artwork, and so there's some nice graphics to go along with them. And so I said, this is interesting, and I took it back, and I had a simulations and games class that I was teaching in the spring. This was when it was back in February, I think it was, the old AACT before they switched to the fall. This was actually the year where they had it both the fall and the spring, right, that we ended up presenting this. So it was, I think, the following year in the spring that we presented. So it was a year after. 99 St. Louis in the spring, and it was a year after in the spring that we presented. So in any case, maybe I'm getting my places wrong, but it took not long. I went back, kind of handed it over to one of my students and said, you know what, yeah, I got some basic ideas. I gave you some parameters, and why don't you kind of run with this? And the first thing this ever became is a card game. Nothing more, no technical anything. If anybody's seen the card game, it's actually sort of floated around in various presentations from time to time. But that was developed first. So if anybody's interested in the card game, it costs money. It's the problem, because to reproduce like a card game with laminate and all that, it's like $15 or $20 to make something like that unless you mass produce it, which truthfully, most people aren't interested in board games. They want something they can go to a website and use. So for about 3 or 4 years, we started using it. Now, the first iteration was just that of the student project. And I took it, modified it. You know how the iterative cycles of prototyping and development go. It took about a cycle or two of playing it, getting feedback, playing it, before I was prepared to say, all right, let's go and get this made into like a real deal card game. Once we did that, we've been using it sort of ever since, which I think is where the next one
kicks in. That's right.
So let me go to the next one. And eventually, we kicked it over to the online game, which was another student. I mean, it's kind of the luxury of working in academia, I suppose, is you have like really talented, you know, hardworking, a lot of time on their hands students. And so I worked very closely with this person. Now, I did all the game design per se. Like, I wanted these mechanics, I wanted, because if you've ever done this, translating a game from board based to online, from multiplayer to single player, there's a lot of stuff that you have to consider, especially gameplay dynamics. So I worked with them on this, and so the second student came up with a Flash version, and this was sort of my design for his implementation. So we've been using that. This is, in fact, what Selena and Bill and myself have been using in the current study, which is to sort of use this to better our students' understanding, and as we'll find out later, kind of better our own understanding of what we do and how we teach it. So, anyway, moving on.
Yeah, and also just a couple tidbits.
Go ahead.
Is that the paper-based game is played face-to-face, so it's a multiple-player game, and the online game is more or less playing solitaire. So it becomes like a solitaire.
I've played it in duos and triads as well.
Have you?
Yeah, and that works out pretty well. It's slower. Like, they'll kind of, you know, they don't want to be embarrassed or thinking you're wrong, so it takes about twice as long for, like, a duo to do it. They tend to score a little bit better, though.
And then, this is where Selena, as you can see here, Selena, unfortunately, she could not attend this conference due to a last-minute situation dealing with her personal situation. But she said, well, Bill, you could do it for me, or we could do it online, and I'm not sure about wireless connections here, or we could do it in Captivate. And just to let you know, I can't really duplicate her accent. So here we are, and I will press play, and we will have virtual Selena. If you want me to stop, if you have any questions, we'll stop.
We will see. I think it's pretty good.
I'm Selena Byers, and since I could not be there in person,
can you hear?
I will be joining you virtually. I will be covering today the methods portion of our presentation, as well presenting and discussing a little bit the data that we collected from the introductory instructional design course, since I was the one teaching them. For this research, we use three graduate level instructional design courses. And we had, in the introductory courses and in the advanced courses, we asked the students to play the game and then to post some reflections on what the game presented, the concepts the game presented to them. In the introductory course, they played the game once, and they played that the first day of class, just after they have taken the initial test, the test that we applied a test that tested their knowledge in the field of instructional design. For the advanced course, the students played the game twice. They played at the beginning of the course as well as in the introductory course, but also they played a second time after they have completed some instructional design-related work. The link to the online version of the Many Hats game was made available to the students, and they were instructed to play again if necessary to refresh their minds on the concepts presented to them through the game. And they should choose an ID hat, an attribute of that hat, as well as an elaboration of the attribute. And then to think about a situation in which they were involved and had to wear this hat that they chosen. And then we ask them to reflect on that and post that reflection on a discussion board. And then repeat the experience. So think about choose another hat, another attribute, and an elaboration of that attribute, and also reflect based on their experience. The instructional design introductory course that we used in this research is the first of a two instructional design course in a master program in instructional technology. This program has two tracks, a corporate track in which the majority of the students are full-time students that have just finished a bachelor level degree, and the school track that is composed by a population of people that work in the public school systems or in higher education or any other type of work that are interested in pursuing a master degree. The big difference is that the majority of the online population is from people that have some professional experience already. In the course, we cover the ISD model, we cover the needs assessment, the instructional analysis. The students learn how to write performance objectives, to compose the instructional strategy, and do the instructional development. For this research specifically, the face-to-face class that is mostly from the corporate track students, we had a class of 16 students, and the online was a class of 20 students. The results of the initial tests taken by the students in the face-to-face and online classes indicate that they knew what instructional design was, but they had a lower level of knowledge on the phases of an instructional design process. You can see, that the analysis, design, development, evaluation, and I also include the average of their knowledge or the results. And you can see also that the online students, maybe because of their professional experience, knew a little more in terms than compared with the face-to-face, but not significantly. the game explored five of the commonly worn hats by instructional designers, and the discharge represents the frequency of the hats used in the reflections by the students from the face-to-face class. As you can see, counselor and performer are at the same percentage level, and they were the most commonly referred to by this group of students. Discharge represents the frequency of the hats chosen or referred to in the reflections of the online students. And maybe because of their profession, most of them were teachers, performer is a hat, heavily chosen. We then looked into the nature of the reflections. If the reflections were made based on a personal experience, a professional experience, a teaching experience, or an experience related to instructional designers. For the face-to-face students, as you can see, the majority of the reflections were based on personal experience, followed by professional, a little bit of teaching, and zero for instructional design related experience. The reflection types for the online students, it's a little bit different. The majority based their reflection on professional experience. Teaching is a very heavy, it is a very heavy presence in the reflections. And also, we have an introduction at least of a reference to instructional design related experiences.
Okay, thank you, Selena. Now let's take a look at the Vance ID course. And just hold on for just a little second here. Because we have similar results as far as the display of looking at the ID course. Oh, let me go back. Too bad there's not like a really good segue. There you go. So the Advanced ID course, and it is basically one of the capstones courses in this particular curriculum, and that enables graduate students to work on a consulting team with an actual client. And that's what happens the first week or so. I said, well, welcome to the consulting group, and I have them complete applications. After like around the third week, I assign them to a consulting project. And so they work together on that consulting project the rest of the semester. So it covers basically the full gamut of the ADDIE model. This last semester, in the spring semester, we had 12 students in that particular course. And let me go back to, let's go back here for a second. And so at the beginning of that semester, in addition to their application, they played the game. And so you could see here is their reflections compared to the beginning courses. It's a little bit different. You could see 23% selected or personally selected the designer as artist archetype. 33% looked at the user, designer's user. 14% counselor, 15% performer, as well as 14% problem solver. And then they also, 10%, which was a little bit interesting, looked at the instructional designer from their instructional design experience. And just to let you know, it was really just one main thread. One student posted their experience with a designer as a user dealing with instructional needs analysis. The rest was either personal or professional experience as well as their teaching experience. I don't know if you noticed the nuance with this advanced course. What we did is that they played it twice. They played it at the beginning of the semester, and then in the middle of their project, they also played the game again and reflected upon their current experience dealing with the consulting project. So you could see here's, again, the breakdown. Again, similar with the designer's user archetype, they 36% of the postings was looking at the designer's user archetype. The second was problem solver, and so on. Now, I don't have a graphic for the instructional design, professional, personal, and teaching experience because it was all instructional design experience, because I had them reflect upon their actual instructional design project with respect to the game. So here are some comments, and I don't know how much time we have left because I don't want to read verbatim by the actual quotes, but you can see it's very rich in context. Here's an instructional design experience. This is actually the actual the initial thread, looking at front-end analysis, quote. Professional, here's a professional one. This is something looking at their own profession. And actually, this one is a designer's user archetype. I chose this one first because this is important. Anything we do as professionals, we've always heard that the customer is always right. Well, they may not be right, but they do need to be accommodated in almost every occurrence. As a registrar, my role is to provide timely information for my customers and colleagues. So he took his experience, current experience as registrar of a community college, and saw that as the, connected to the designer's user archetype. There's other ones. This is a variety of ones. I don't know if we have time to go through all of them. Do you want me to read them to you, or are you?
Just pick a couple.
There's actually one I want to take a look at because it's actually kind of gets at wearing at the many hats that one does as an instructional designer. The last one it says is, it is true, as we have all discovered, if we did not already know, instructional design team does indeed wear many hats. What I found to be interesting was not only could I identify with some of the hats I wore, but I could see the hats my group members wore. And so that just reminded me, when we did play the game face to face, we would have informal discussions to say, oh yeah, you play the role of the performer. Or yeah, this John or Tony plays the role as the problem solver. So they were able to metacognitively see their variety of roles that they do play under the guise of an instructional designer. Some immediate or initial conclusions in looking at these three case studies is that the similarities we noticed between all three categories, between the beginning course and the advanced course, is that there were similar percentages with problem solver and performer across the board for each of the courses. There were differences between the introductory course and the advanced course in that there was more postings for the designer's artist and designer's counselor, whereas there was a clear identification with the advanced students with the designer's user. So for somehow they were more sophisticated in an understanding of that particular archetype as designer's user, whereas it was low percentages for those beginning students. We noticed that the type of reflections were really based upon their subjective experience. They didn't really rely much on the overall essence of an instructional designer. As you notice, the initial face-to-face students, really 50%, I think it was about 50%, was more on the personal experience. They didn't relate it to any professional experience at all. Whereas the initial online students, where they are coming from the industry, had a majority of the postings based upon professional as well as the advanced students. And we clearly saw within the quotes that the advanced students, once they got, were in the midst of their project, they saw very defined archetype, the five archetype roles within their project. They saw themselves as problem solver, or they saw themselves as counselor. One interesting quote was that the one student saw, not only were they a counselor to their client, but when I'm working on an instructional design team, they had to put on that hat as a designer or counselor with their team members. Now, one interesting thing that I found with the advanced ID students' postings, they didn't really see the role of the designer as artists in their professional experience, their teaching experience, nor their instructional design roles. It was really kind of all the postings were really based upon their personal experience, What does an artist do, and what kind of flavor, bringing in more graphics? But it wasn't really, they didn't really see, make the connection with the designers, artist archetype, with what they do as instructional designers. And I think it's related to the whole issue of the creativity in instructional design. How do we bring more creativity or acknowledge the creative process of what we do as instructional designers? Next step, so where we're bringing this, is we're going to collect more data consistently, in that we're going to go to all three sites and find an introductory instructional design course at each of the three sites and an advanced instructional design course at each of the three sites. They're going to play the game during the first week, but then also we found that there were benefits by having students play the game after they complete some sort of instructional design activity. Because it gives them some insight to say, yeah, I just finished this task analysis, and now I could see the designer's user archetype more clearly. Or maybe the more designer's problem solver activity archetype. And we wanted to collect this data on a longitudinal basis. Like, we could foresee where we collect data for the next 3 years, and that will give us, obviously, more numbers, but then we can also track people. So we could track a student who started year one and look at their archetype reflections throughout their careers and instruction throughout the program and see the changes or maybe similarities in their thinking processes. Given the amount of time that we had for this presentation, we didn't go into depth into the contextual nature of the postings, but we could see where there's a lot of rich data there in their postings and really give us a more richer, in-depth sense of how these students react to these archetypes. And so the idea is to bring in more of a qualitative data analysis in these postings. And I think it would give us a sense of what the benefits of the games, as well as the drawbacks of the game, in their perceptions of being an instructional designer. Yeah.
This is sort of our last slide, so we'll try to wrap it up. Thanks, Bill. Actually, we're doing great on time, so we've got time for questions at the end. One of the things that, and again, for many of you, you've never seen the game, so I've got the game up here, and just so you know, you can see it at the end of the presentation. It'll be on display tomorrow, and making a plug for the gaming area that's going to be outside of the Regency Foyer, in the Regency Foyer, where people will be showcasing various games that they've developed. So have all sorts of time. We'll be there on and off. I'll make sure that the link is posted in case I'm not there. But in any case, after the presentation, if you want to see the actual game, I can put it on your webpage, bookmark it, and then you've got it. Totally free, open source, whatever. You know, profit, not-for-profit, I don't care. If you're going to be manipulating or changing in any way, obviously we would want to know. But if you're just going to use it, no problem. But in any case, one of the things this did is this brought me back. I just got done with my NCATE process. And if anybody's doing that, they know that that can be a rewarding experience. It broadened my definition of rewarding.
And if that fits the NCATE standard, right?
Yeah. So we just got done redoing our dispositions about a year ago. And this is a bit of a softer thing. Like, obviously, everybody realizes that when you look at your program, you look at them in light of the standards, you want to say, all right, I want these courses on these particular topics, and we want to make sure we cover this and that course, and we want to make sure, you know, otherwise, that we're covering the content of the standards of AACT. But one of the other things that's also important is the dispositions of your students. Now, our teacher ed folks, who are also important, we have many students from them, have dispositions that are very much related to being a teacher, but we have specific dispositions that we want educational technologists, multimedia designers, and instructional designers to have. And what we've kind of seen with this game, and it's actually kind of a neat thing that we did not expect, I guess we could put it that way, we sort of put it together recently, is we're really teaching through this game the dispositions of an instructional designer. What should your actions be? What should your attitudes be? What should, as we say, your knowledge, skills, and dispositions? We kind of got the knowledge and skills covered with our scanners, but the dispositions oftentimes don't get a lot of play. So this does a great job, I think, of getting us to think about what are those sort of terminal behaviors. Counseling is a very important thing. How do you measure that? Well, maybe you don't, but you can still sort of, at least in a self-reflective way, in a metacognitive way, get somebody to think about when they there being a counselor and how to be a good counselor without sending them off to get a, you know, a specialization as a counselor. These are important things. Being an artist and being creative, these are important things. So ultimately, as we look down, we kind of have a couple of goals in mind. One is to have them be aware of their own dispositions, their own knowledge of the many hats, if you will. But finally, it kind of pulls back into, and we put it in italics, our strengths and weaknesses. What do we do as a program well, and what don't we do? And finally, look at our existing dispositions, look at the outcomes of the game, and say, is there a match there? And not just say, let's modify the game to make a match. We can modify the dispositions to match the game. In other words, it can be a sort of iterative thing where it gets us to really think about, in a, not necessarily an authentic setting, but people's reflections of their experiences in authentic settings about what it means to be an instructional designer. So this, I would recommend to folks, if you're going to use this, there's a lot of different ways it can be used, but it can also be used sort of at a programmatic level, a broader level, to help you really think about what are those attitudes, what are those soft skills that you want people to have, and that's where this sort of expands out. So I guess we maybe have 2 minutes for questions. So I'll stop talking. I guess I've got it pulled up here. So if anybody wants to look on the side, the game is there. If for some reason you have to leave for the second half of the presentation or whatever, email tony@teachers.com.
You're all set there.
Yeah. So I think we're all set. First off, you can sort of transition at this point. Are there any questions about the game? How many people have actually used the game? It's actually, I mean, I don't want to, like, you know,
okay,
have our own game, but okay. It's not bad.
It sounds exciting. How do you teach the students what your, or how do you communicate what your archetypes are?
Actually, by playing the game.
Okay.
That by playing the game, you're supposed to match, and so you're given a particular attribute, and then so then five categories, and then you say, well, is this a designer's counselor? Is this a designer's performer? You can also email me, which is on the handout.
Right. You can email Bill on the handout. You can send you a link as well. So, yeah. Anyway,
all right.
Sorry.
Thank you, Bill and Tony.
Thank you.
Are you going to be around after this next session?
Thank you.
For people to talk with?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Then great. Then the conversation can carry on there.
Sure.
Something I thought about when you mentioned the PowerPoints being available and making the changes, and it's probably have to discuss on any forum. If we're using the PowerPoints and the audio, we have a Creative Commons license or what goes along with it so people can know which, what they can do with what's available. It'd be good to talk about it, get that on there. All right, I'll go around and collect these.